Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a chance to catch up with some of the old bold pilots, a vibrant group that meets weekly in Oceanside, California. If you're ever there on a Wednesday morning, go shake some of their hands at Denny's on the corner of Vista and El Camino Real. You might even meet the Flying Greek, Steve Pisanos, now 96 years old. He left his native land for America as a teenager, became a pilot, and before America even entered World War II, he went to England to fly for the Royal Air Force in the No. 71 Eagle Squadron. Close to 250 volunteers from America ended up flying in those Eagle Squadrons for the RAF. You can read all about Steve's story in his book, The Flying Greek, complete with a foreword written by Walter Cronkite. Let's jump back into that busy restaurant now and ask Steve how many of those Eagle Squadron pilots are still alive in 2016.
Less than a dozen, I would say.
Yeah, and a lot of people have never heard of this. Some people don't even realize that Americans were flying over there before America was in
the
war.
That's correct. That's correct.
So you were flying Spitfires.
Yes.
And what kind of German opposition were you facing?
FW-190s, enemy 109s. I shot down 10 of them. Mm-hmm. 6 FW-190s and 4 ME-109s.
10 planes claimed makes you a double ace.
Correct.
But you're over there flying for the Royal Air Force against these German fighters. I imagine you had more than your share of close calls.
Oh, my God, quite a bit.
What stands out in your mind? If people read your book, what are the ones they're going to say? Holy moly, is that the truth?
After 106 missions, I was on an escort mission down to Bordeaux, France. And we got into a fight there. I sat down 3 of the guys there, and, of course, on the way back, I lost my engine flying a P-51, and I crash-landed south of Le Havre, about 25, 30 kilometers. The Germans came after me. I was trying to put fire on my crashed Mustang, and they began to fire over my head, all over the place. And I got so scared, I dropped everything, and I ran, and I got into a forest. They came into the forest, and it was then how I more or less lost them. And for 5 days, I wandered all over the countryside with an injured shoulder. And then about 5 days later, I made contact with the resistance. Thank God I had learned French in high school in Athens. But I never really thought that I would speak French in America, you know. But it came handy, you know, at that time. And I'll never forget one of my Frenchman friends, you know. He told the other guy, he said, "Le Grec American parle français." You know, the Greek American speaks French. And they took care of me so wonderful. And I got decorated by Charles de Gaulle with 2 kisses when I was given the French Croix de Guerre. And about 3-4 years ago, I got a letter from the American Embassy in Washington. "Dear Colonel Pisanos, the government in Paris discovered that you contributed immensely for our liberation, and they have awarded you the Legion of Honor, the highest French decoration." They wanted to know whether I could go to Washington to be decorated. I told them that I couldn't make it. They came out here and they presented me with the decoration at the museum in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And it was unbelievable. There were more people and friends and everybody.
I imagine you received some pretty heady decorations from our government as well.
Oh, yeah.
During the war.
I got 5 DFCs and the Legion of Merit with 2 clusters. And
5 Distinguished Flying Crosses, no big deal. You mentioned that incident. After 106 missions between flying the Spitfires with the RAF and flying American fighters, you're in a P-51, you're shot up, and you brought it in for a crash landing. Did you think about trying to bail out at any point?
Well, I tried to, but I was having difficulties when I decided not to bail out in high altitude because the Germans were really shooting at anybody coming down in a parachute. So I decided to wait until I get lower, but then as I tried to unstrap myself, you know, I was so goddamn close to the ground, and I had stepped out on the from the cockpit, and I was just ready to, you know, when the aircraft was to hit the ground, you know, try to. But thank God, the right wing hit the ground, the aircraft twisted to the right a little bit, and I was thrown way, just missing the prop, the stop prop, you know. And how long I stood right there, you know, lying on my back, and I looked up in the sky, and I said, "My God," I said, "my shoulder," and so on. And It was then when the Germans evidently had spotted me and followed the aircraft, you know, when I crash landed.
So you weren't even at the controls when you crash landed.
Oh, yeah.
You were standing.
I was standing outside the cockpit.
Trying to jump.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, my book has the photo on the outside of the book. Shows how I'm standing out by the cockpit, outside the cockpit.
Uh-huh. I've seen that photo, and I'll make sure it's on our website at hometownheroesradio.com. So you jump off, you're banged up, you're injured, but the Germans are still shooting at you.
Yeah, and when I saw the bullets flying all over my head, you know, I decided to drop everything, forget about burning the aircraft, you know, and I began to run. And thank God I was close to the forest there, and that's when I got into the forest. And they came along too, and I lost them in the forest, of course. And for 5 days, I wandered all over the countryside, and I drank water from running creeks, and I found a farm, you know, that had cabbage. And my God, I ate a whole cabbage one day. I was so hungry and scared and injured and so on. And until later on, I made contact with the French.
Right, so this French resistance, the underground, gets you out of there. And then did you go back to flying?
No. When Paris was liberated and some 800 Americans came out from hiding, B-17 guys and fighter pilots, of course, we were all brought back to England, and I went back to my unit, but they wouldn't let me fly. So I was returned to the States, and I was assigned to Dayton, Ohio at Wright Field. That's when I went through test pilot school with Yeager and Don Gentile and all those guys. And in fact, I took a good part in testing the P-80, the first jet we had at Muroc Lake.
I think people are getting the idea from your cross-Atlantic journey that you're plotting and no one else knows about, that you're going to jump off in America, to going over to fly for the British, to all these missions for the British and the Americans, to then back as a test pilot. It doesn't seem like you're afraid of much.
No.
Where does that come from?
I don't know. I don't know. The Greek blood or something. Something.
The flying Greek. You sure it wasn't the crazy Greek?
Oh, my God. No. Could have been, yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned that P-80.
Yeah.
What was that like? Because, I mean, this is a complete experiment. Nobody knows if this is safe or not, and it's your job
absolutely.
To be the guinea pig.
Yeah,
huh?
I was one of the test pilots who did the test program at P-80. And funny, you know, later on when I met Adolf Galland and I told him I had flown the ME-262, the FW-190, the ME-109, he thought that I was a pilot, you know, belonging to one of the Balkan air forces.
Ah.
So then I had to tell him who I was and so on.
Because that was one of the other things you did at the tail end of World War II, was you flew captured enemy aircraft?
Correct.
To get a feel for their capabilities?
Yeah, to do the testing. Yeah, we had them at Wright Field. I flew the FW-190, the ME-109, the Zero, and the ME-262.
So this is after the war's over?
After the war, yeah.
But all these captured aircraft are there. So when you're flying one of these planes that had been flying against Americans during the war, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to learn?
We were trying to find out, you know, what the Germans had done that we did not know. And that's comparing their aircraft with our own aircraft.
So how would you compare the ME-262 to the P-51, which you flew? Because those two saw combat against each other.
Yeah. Well, the ME-262 was, or the FW-190, they were really, the German aircraft were far superior than even the British, the Spitfire or the Hurricane. But nevertheless, they were good flying machines.
Does that make it even more amazing to you?
Oh, absolutely.
That your side won?
Absolutely, yeah.
How do you explain all that? How do you explain your story?
Well, it's hard to tell, but... That's why I wrote the book. Yeah.
Did I see somewhere that Yeager was shot down the same day you were?
The 5th of March, 1944. We didn't know each other, you know, until we met later on, you know. He said, you went down the 5th of March? I went down too. And it was the same mission. Our group took the bombers down to Bordeaux, and his group brought the bombers back.
Uh-huh.
And that's when we, both of us, went down.
How about that? And years later, you're test pilots together.
Unbelievable, yeah.
And how long did you keep that up? How long did you continue flying for the Air Force?
I left in the latter part of 44, and I joined TWA.
All right.
I flew for TWA for about a couple more years, and then I was on a flight to Washington, D.C., and I met my buddy, Don Gentile, who was at the Pentagon. And I told him that, you know, I don't know whether the airline flying, you know, is really what I want. Well, he said, about coming back on active duty. I said, they won't take me. I don't have a two-year college. They want college guys. Yeah, but he said, the experience you have, you know, they will ought to have you. I'm going to send you an application for a return to active duty, he said. Oh, about less than a month, you know, a Western Union guy knocked my door. He said, Mr. Pisanos? I said, yeah. He said, you got a telegram. By direction of the President of the United States, you are recalled to active duty and you are to report to headquarters USAF.
So then you went back in, you rose to the rank of colonel?
Yes.
And when did you retire?
The end of 73.
So were you over flying in Vietnam?
Yes, I flew in Vietnam, and I was involved with in Korea, but I didn't fly any missions in Korea. I was delivering fighter aircraft, Mustangs, from the Air National Guard to Korea.
And what did you do in Vietnam?
In Vietnam, I was a pilot with the Caribou Squadron, C-7, and although I had volunteered from Germany to go to Vietnam as a fighter pilot, but when they found out that I had in my records, you know, an airline transport pilot, and they decided to send me, you know, to a Caribou squadron. Mm-hmm. And that's where I ended up.
So you're flying cargo planes.
Yeah, I flew over 100 missions in Vietnam.
You're 96 years old.
Correct.
You don't look it. I don't. Maybe all that time in the air kept
maybe
you young.
You know, one of my friends, you know, wanted to know, what was the secret? I said, olive oil. You drink it? No. I said, I use olive oil in my salads and my cooking and everything. And that's what. So then, funny, you know, about a week or so later, we got together again with a group of guys. And he came along, and I thought, you had a bottle of whiskey or something. He opened it, olive oil. I started to use olive oil. Yeah.
You're passing it on.
Yeah.
If you could tomorrow take any plane up in the sky, and you flew the best planes of every country involved in World War II, and you kept flying long after that. You've flown just about everything. If there's one aircraft you could take up tomorrow, what would it be?
The Mustang.
The P-51.
51, yeah.
Why?
Good aircraft. Well, it had the endurance, was equivalent in maneuvering, equivalent to the Spitfire. And all of us, you know, in the 4th Fighter Group, that we ended up with more victories than any other Air Force organization, felt that the 51 was really the greatest aircraft. Even Adolf Galan admired the 51.
Yeah, he didn't like going up against it, I
Yeah.
know. What do you get out of this group here, the old bold pilots? Why do you come here every week?
Well, the comradeship, you know, the meeting the guys, you know, who had been in the Air Force, in the war, and it's just unbelievable, you know, to be associated with guys, you know, who took part in America's dilemma.
You said unbelievable. I think that describes your life story, and I hope people will pick up the book, The Flying Greek. I've got it linked at hometownheroesradio.com. When you think about your own life experience and everything you've been through in 96 years, what's the most amazing part in your mind, the most amazing aspect of your story?
Becoming an American citizen. Honest to God, this wonderful country is the greatest in the world. And I get mad, especially some guys, you know, who one time on the television, he said, God damn America. I told my wife, I said, I'm going to go and meet this guy, you know, and kill that son of a buck, then check in with the FBI. Oh, he says, sit down. Don't be silly. But, you know, this country is the most wonderful country on earth. There is no question about that. And anyone who criticizes America or speaks bad about America, I get mad.
Have you ever wondered how different your life would have been if you didn't jump ship in Baltimore?
I would have probably ended up in Greece somewhere and becoming something.
And speaking of Greece, I've got to close that loop here. You said when you left Greece and you came to America, your family didn't hear from you till after World War II. So how did you re-engage with your family, and what was that like?
I finally got in contact with them, and of course they were surprised that I was still alive. But the funny part was that my last assignment in the Air Force, when I came back from Vietnam, I was assigned to Little Rock Air Force Base. I had been promoted to colonel. I got a call, how would you like to go to Athens as chief of the Air Force mission? I said, come on. I said, who are you pulling my leg? No. He says, I told my guys to find me a colonel who can speak Greek and fighter pilot and so on. The reason is that the Greek Air Force was looking to buy a new fighter. And they looked at the French Mirage, the British Jaguar, and the American Phantom. And we need someone, you know, who can speak Greek. So we had a big competition. pressure. So I called a contact I had at the Pentagon. I said, I want you to make arrangements and send me two fandoms from Germany for a demonstration in Athens. And that convinced the Greeks, you know, to buy the A4.
Mm-hmm.
And they bought that in 1973-74, and my God, they're still flying it to this day.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to you. A gift to your homeland.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
Well, Steve, I just want to say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for sharing a little bit of your amazing story with us. Is there anything else you think we need to know?
No, I think America has been the greatest, and you better be good to my adopted country, because if you speak bad about my adopted country, I'll get mad.
Steve's okay. Coming for you.
Okay, my good friend.
Don't mess with that 96-year-old Steve Pisanos, the Flying Greek. Again, I have a link to his book with that title at our website, hometownheroesradio.com. You'll also find a photo of our other guest today, Rod Braswell. And if you ever find yourself in Oceanside, California on a Wednesday morning, go meet them and the rest of the Old Bold Pilots at Denny's on the corner of Vista and El Camino. We'll hear from another Old Bold Pilot next time when we're reminded once more through the stories of our amazing veterans that freedom is not free.